Welcome to episode 237 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Fox Sports' Debs Majumdar about commercializing sports broadcasts and driving revenue and growth via Twitter.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who can help your team drive more revenue from digital team, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callinan. You can find the podcast that you are listening to, Sports Geek, at sportsgeekhq.com or on your favorite podcast platforms, whether that be Pocket Cast, my fave, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Spreaker, any particular one, even Spotify and the like. Or additionally, you can find us via the newsletter. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/SGN to sign up for our weekly newsletter. Or you might be part of Sports Geek Nation and talking to people via our Slack channels and participating in our weekly Ask Me Anything sessions with sports colleagues from around the world. We're currently closed at the moment for the Sports Geek Nation, but as a podcast listener, you can join up and sign up by going to sportsgeeknation.com/connected. That's the little back door that I leave open for podcast listeners. As always, you can find me via email, sean@sportsgeekhq, or via social media on most platforms as at Sean Callinan or at Sports Geek. So if you do listen, I understand podcasting isn't the most social of platforms. People are listening in different modes where they're not, where they don't have their phone. You might be driving your car. You might be on a train commute. You might be in the gym. If so, push a little harder. But when you do get a chance, send me a message. Tell me you listen. Tell me what episodes you've liked. Please reach out to our guests, and tell them what you liked, and ask them a bit more about the podcast. Thanks to Andrew O'Connor, who reached out via LinkedIn, and has been listening for a long time. All the best with the LNB. For those who don't know, that's the pro basketball scene in France. Before I get in to my conversation with Debs, because it is very much talking about driving revenue from digital, it very much fits into what we do here at Sports Geek with the digital to dollars process. And we can, you sort of see through the interview, we sort of step through some of these pieces in the conversation with Debs. Our process is know your audience, understanding what your audience looks like, their behaviors, what they're doing on different platforms, what are the different segments we want to that are attractive for both what we want to do from a content point of view, engagement point of view, and then a commercial point of view. It all starts with the audience, understanding them, and then knowing your content, understanding what content you're developing, why you're developing it, what outcomes you want from that content. So it's really reviewing the content that your content team, your digital team, whatever you might call it, are producing. And then know your distribution, knowing the different platforms that you've got available, how they're different, how you can customize your delivery of the content you're developing to those platforms. And it pretty much is a big discussion point here in this interview with Debs around how they leveraged Twitter specifically and the content they produce for that platform, but then also leveraging it from a revenue opportunity, which I think is really exciting for both what Fox Sports are doing, but then also for sports teams and the industry overall, that we're starting to see different revenue streams from different particular platforms. But then we also get into this commercial reality of sponsorships and partnerships and where it fits. And so part of that is the next part of our process, which is know your value, understanding what the value you are bringing, both in the content creation side of things, but then also what is the value of particular platforms and posts. What value do you put on a particular Facebook post, a particular tweet, or a particular type of tweet, or a particular Instagram post? Understanding that gives you the building blocks for people like Debs to be able to put those proposals together, taking the content pieces that your team are doing, and then also produce some campaigns and give outcomes to your partners in the Know Your Pitch segment. So if you're interested, if you want to straighten up your digital strategy and understand and help your digital team align with commercial objectives, that's what Digital to Dollars is built for. It's to help improve that process between digital and commercial to help you drive more digital outcomes. If you want more info, go to digitaltodollars.com or give me a call. Give me a call, 0407-047-200. Put a plus 61 in front of that if you're in the US or in Europe. Or use email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, and we'll tee up a time to chat about it. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Debs Majumdar as much as I did. We caught up at Fox Sports Studios in Sydney to chat about his role, his journey into the digital commercial side of the business, but then also some of the stuff that they did around Fox Cricket and Fox Football and what they've done with Twitter to drive more revenue and more viewers and more engagement on that platform in particular. So this is my chat with Debs Majumdar from Fox Sports. Very happy to be here at Fox Studios here in Sydney. My guest today is the Commercial Manager Digital at Fox Sports, Debs Majumdar. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Sean. I'd like to be a bit cheesy here and say long-time listener, first-time podcaster.
Oh, that's terrific. So, well, you know the format. You know the format. I need to know your origin story. So how did you get your break into sports? How did you find you to where you are today?
Yeah, good question. I feel I've almost come sort of full circle in a sense that I initially started my career in the content side of the business. So originally working for the likes of Sky News and SBS. For a very short stint, I was a technology and finance reporter for SBS.
And so in front of the camera?
Yep, correct. In front of the camera. And then I realized at some point that, look, this wasn't for me. This was kind of the first step in a career in media, which is always ever evolving, and for whatever reason, the dark side of commercial always
Don't talk about it like it's the dark side.
You speak to content guys, and they tend to lean it towards that way. But no, look, I always found that side of the business always very very interesting. My family has a sort of a business and commercial background, so I felt this was kind of the next.
So you talk about the dark side. I talk about it as the bringing the revenue in and making sure everything is sustainable, which is really key in media because, you know, I think you probably heard me say I played the digital divorce counselor between the commercial and the digital or the content folk. So coming from the content side, what was your first role looking at the commercial piece?
Yeah, well, look, I tell you what, I jumped in head first and went into a sales coordinator role basically. Okay. For me, that was just the natural kind of progression there in terms of learning about the side of the business that brings in the money, I guess, cutting your teeth in the world of agency and direct clients.
Yep.
And learning, I guess, the ropes in terms of how hard it is to get media dollars through the door.
And was it a mix of – so is this at SBS? Was it a mix of TV, digital was starting to get a little bit more mature? Like, was it TV first, like – to begin with?
It was actually digital to begin with.
Okay.
And then as it always evolved, the TV and digital proposition obviously going out to market together. So it was a great way to upskill in that space. But always digital first and then learn the ropes of TV thereafter.
And so you worked at a few different, I guess, TV media properties, SBS, Foxtel, Optus, and now you found yourself in this role. What's your current role? Fox Sports.
So current role is commercial manager at Fox Sports. I sit within the digital team.
Yep.
A lot of people say, well, what's a commercial manager?
That was going to be my next question, but yeah.
So look, it's effectively I get to sit in the cross-section between our digital product team. I get to liaise day in, day out with our marketing team, with our legal team, and also work very closely with our sales partner, MCN or multi-channel network as well. So in a nutshell, what a commercial manager does is it sits between all of these different parties and looks at other ways of generating revenue through our, I guess, owned and syndicated properties.
So Fox Sports is a well-known global name. But just for audience that might not know either in Australia what the assets you've got, but also internationally, just give us a bit of a, I guess, the landscape of what Fox Sports is in this market.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those who don't know Fox Sports in Australia, I do know you've got a couple of your subscribers who do come from overseas. Is that we are the number one sports broadcaster in the country. We have 8 broadcast linear channels, and we talk to about 3 million Australians every week. We sit across all platforms, digital apps, streaming, as you would have seen with our newly launched property, KO Sports. And basically our vision at Fox Sports and what gets us up out of bed every day is we always aim to engage and excite fans by bringing them closer to the game but also to Fox Sports at the same time. Storytelling's, I guess, at the corner of what we do. And we always know that sport isn't just what happens on the field. It's that whole conversation that happens predominantly off the field as well. I mean, you look at any grudge match that Conor McGregor has, and a lot of fun actually happens outside the octagon.
Yeah, yeah. So from a content point of view, you've got partnership key rights across a lot of Australian sports. What are the sports that are currently in the Fox Sports portfolio? Because it's pretty varied. What are the key sports you've got currently under the umbrella?
Yeah, absolutely. Cricket is one of our newest sports.
Yeah, that's one of the latest new deals.
Yeah, absolutely, from last year. And that was an interesting one because that traditionally sat with Channel 9 for 30-odd years. So it was really time for us to, I guess, come in and break new ground in that space.
And you sort of followed, to look at your other the other key properties of the winter sports here in Australia. You've got your AFL and NRL, which Fox Sports have been long-time partners. Mm-hmm. You've got channels for those, Fox League and Fox Footy.
Fox Footy, yep.
And then effectively you've got into cricket, which is the summer sport of choice in Australia, and you've now got a Fox Cricket opportunity and those kind of things. So what were some of the exciting parts of taking on a new sport? Because it's great having the rolling contracts with big viewership around the football codes, but what was something, I guess, different and fresh canvas that cricket offered?
Yeah, look, cricket was just an absolutely awesome one for us because, as you said, NRL and footy were have always been our bread and butter.
Yeah,
we do have football in terms of A-League, which typically kicks off there at about October to May, which is quite nice because it's almost in that off season of league and footy. But having cricket just meant we could offer our fans something more, something different, something extra in that summer period where traditionally they, might have downgraded their Foxtel subscriptions because they might have been hardcore NRL and footy fans. So it was just being able to give them something else, but also having fun with a game like cricket that's just so ingrained in Australian culture. We've had, and I'm going to use this pun, we've had such great runs on the board when it comes to footy and league. We wanted to bring that energy, that enthusiasm, that freshness to cricket.
And that's the piece coming, especially for a property like cricket or a sport like cricket, coming off such a long deal. This is how you always view cricket. And so the opportunity when you get a new property is, how do you do it differently? What's your spin on it? But then also be telling everyone this is where cricket is now. So that must have been an exciting part. So where did some of, because where does, like you said before, you're working with the marketing teams that want subscribers and you're working with the content teams that are developing the product. So where is your play area around how do you commercialize those pieces?
Yeah, absolutely. This one was always going to be an interesting one with cricket because it was one of the first times we, as part of our rights deal, that we had some select social rights as well. And as with audience fragmentation, there's just limitless possibilities outside of our own and operated properties. So part of my role here was to basically say, look, it's great that we've outlaid all this cash to buy and have the privilege of bringing cricket to Australians. But now how do we commercialise it? But how do we commercialise it, I guess, authentically? Mm-hmm. We want to move, I guess, beyond, the typical ad break type model. Our mantra has always been no ad breaks, siren to siren, or effectively no ad breaks within play.
Yep.
Cricket was always that unique one because you've got 6 balls and then you've got an over. How do you fill that gap? You can't always go to an ad break. there's only so much.
But it's sort of like baseball in the sense that it's got these natural, at the slow pace of the game, it has the spots for the breaks, you know, whereas NRL is a continuous game. The AFL is a continuous game, maybe with, you know, the spots for goals, like it's sort of built for it, but you want to reimagine a little bit.
Absolutely. Yep. And connecting, and I guess what we were sitting in the digital team, what we really wanted to do was complement our broadcast. So what we did there was have commercial opportunities in and around, well, how can we bring a Trivia HQ style execution inside cricket, for example. So inside an over or a drinks break, we'd get our commentators or presenters to throw to our game, which was called Streaker, which was, you know, a bit much like Trivia HQ. You could go in, answer questions on our Fox Cricket app, and you could build up your hot streak, so to speak. Integrated opportunities, which gave our brand partners, you know, something new and different. Our mantra for cricket was cricket like never before. A bit generic, but very...
You have to live up to it.
Exactly. Yeah. In terms of making it bigger, making it better as well.
And so one of the things, the reason we reconnected was at a Money in Sport mini-series where you hosted Angus Keane from Twitter, and you talked about how important Twitter and the partnership with Twitter was around Fox Cricket and the way that, you know, Twitter is moving and changing as a platform and how they work with broadcasters. Can you take us a little bit behind the scenes of what that, you know, what that deal is, and obviously you're part of it, so, you know, what the commercial realities of that kind of deal is?
Yeah, absolutely. Twitter was always a unique one for us because, and as I mentioned at the Money in Sport event, 2 years ago, Twitter was not an area of focus for us. A lot of our resources went to predominantly Facebook, obviously Instagram, and also Snapchat as well. It's quite easy to always, I guess, being a sports publisher, being anywhere and everywhere. But we had to prioritize our resources. Fast forward about 18 months before inking the cricket deal, Twitter, there were conversations going on, and they approached us around a more of a partnership-led model, which allowed us to commercialize our content on Twitter, which is always kind of a new-ish sort of space.
That's
for
completely
us.
New, because most of the, I guess, the game plan of the social networks is you've got great content publishers, you've got great content teams, come and talk to our audience.
Exactly.
And it's not, you know, it's not the same as the conversations you have with TV and radio and that kind of thing. So coming in that partnership focus is something that I think is an exciting development for publishers and sports overall.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And what was really great about it was that we knew from day one there would almost be scale immediately. It's not like we had to reinvent the wheel. We didn't have to do a mass kind of audience push or anything like that. So with the way the Twitter Amplify product worked was we effectively inked some new deals with a couple of our existing brand partners to say, look, you've got your TV package, you've got your digital package, but do you know what? We've now got a little bit extra on top, which was the Twitter component as well. So we kind of went into it with a 1+1=5 mentality, whereby we weren't going to be cannibalizing our existing audience.
Because that is the fear. Like that has been the revenue, fear of publishers or rights holders of social. And we see different leagues or rights holders have different opinions. You know, the NBA's approach of letting all our content go everywhere because the eyeballs will come back. And this one is the same. It's like, well, if we put the content out there, one, it grows. One, you can make money. But then the added benefit is, well, I want to watch more cricket. I'm going to come back to Fox. It's like the fact that they're putting a commercial aspect to that makes it far more appealing for you guys.
Yep. You hit the nail on the head there. And I guess where that fit into our vision was, one, we were bringing fans closer to the game that way, because there are a raft of fans on Twitter who aren't Fox Sports subscribers. They're not Foxtel subscribers. In fact, some of the customers who are now following us and now engaging with us weren't initially talking to us before.
Yep.
So it basically allowed us to connect with those new fans, but also bring them closer to Fox Sports. Like you said, it's always difficult putting our content out off our owned and operated properties, especially being a subscription business as well. We're not a free-to-air. sports rights are becoming increasingly expensive. So we need to look at effective ways of commercializing those rights, but serving our customers still in a very authentic way.
So explain to us a little bit for someone trying to figure out, you know, what is this Twitter Amplify? How does it work? How are you making money? Can you take us through like maybe from a brand's point of view, what are they getting in that social Twitter piece? How are they activating that kind of thing? How does it work from you as a rights holder and the brand?
Sure. So essentially, say I'm brand X and I've got a marketing spend which I've already committed a certain component to TV and digital. We work closely with the Twitter sales team, obviously. Yep. Through our own sales team, MCN, in terms of having that conversation, but then saying, do you know what, just for a little bit more, you can now reach customers on Twitter.
Yep.
So what that would mean is, from a publisher point of view, we would no doubt have our live content on television, which brands would get around in terms of, you know, sponsored integration or yep. the usual spots and dots. Digital would be in the form of other integrated assets, but also, you know, your pre-roll, post-roll display assets. Yep. And then on Twitter, we would be creating almost bespoke content there.
Okay.
Around, for example, cricket, you wouldn't have necessarily the diehard cricket fans on that platform, but you'd have probably the transient fans on there. So we would clip up, you know, some of the best sixes, or during the Big Bash, there was a great punter who took a one-hand catch in the stands, and he took that one-hand catch because he was holding his beer as yep. well, didn't want to drop it. Just those
those viral moments that I'm a sports fan, oh, that's a crazy catch. They're going to retweet it or like it or have a conversation around it. And so then you've got that clip. So because there's a lot of digital commercialization options where it's like, cool, we can sell you this, but we still have to build it all.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not talking about, hey, we need another studio or another talking head or another editor cutting stuff. You're talking about, hey, these pieces that we've got. So you're taking existing content, and then is this how is the sponsor involved in that? You've got the guy taking the amazing one-handed catch. How does a car sponsor or a bank sponsor, how do they be part of that content?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, typically they'd come on board, I guess, for more of a season long
yep.
sort of sponsorship. And up ahead, in like it with any partnership, would be very sort of would be very transparent in yep. terms of, you know, what kind of content they would be owning, and it would come back to their objectives. For example, you know, some brands always want to just be in and around those key moments, so that would be a perfect opportunity whereby brand X would automatically get on that one-handed catch.
I keep saying Harrison Ford in The Fugitive, and the guy that who's chasing that all the time, he's the guy that took the catch.
That's right.
The one-armed man.
He did too, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good reference. So that's kind of how they'd get on board. And it'd usually be on the Twitter platform either a 6 or a 15-second pre-roll ahead okay. of that clip. And what would be great there in terms of, for a publisher point of view, but also for the brand, is we being Fox Cricket would publish that that video natively, and that would not only go to all of our followers, but then amplified through the Twitter Amplify product.
Yep.
So instead of reaching, you know, 100,000 fans, it could go 10x right up to sort of a million.
And so how much did that running that product and also having this different strategy in the Twitter space, because you said sort of 2 years ago you're like, just doing Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, we're posting stuff,
yeah.
which a lot of people just, the game's about to start, we'll post that, to being this more integrated with Twitter as a product, being more part of the conversation, sort of trying to be that water cooler space that Twitter is. I think, you know, when we look at things like NBA Twitter and stuff do really, really well, sort of bring a little bit of that secret sauce to mm-hmm. to cricket. What were some of the numbers and bumps that you saw in engagement when you were sort of tackling it in that manner?
Yeah, look, I can go into numbers sort of all day, but two of them come to mind. Fox Cricket, especially, before I want to get into that, because that was one of our biggest growth areas, was
yep.
We've had some campaigns run across football.
Okay.
Football's massive on Twitter. It's one of their most popular sports. It's a key focus for us as a business at Fox Sports. We broadcast the A-League. They've been a long-time partner for us. But it's... traditionally on broadcast, the A-League viewership's been down year on year. So we were looking at, look, how can we kind of reinvigorate the way we reach fans in this space? So Twitter was a great one whereby we initially had about, I'm talking in terms of like an overall reach perspective, we averaged around 5 million a month.
Okay.
Which wasn't too bad. It was, I'd say, good to average. After the Twitter partnership and all of the amplification and the custom-made content and that we kept producing for the, our Fox Football channels, we basically went from 5 mil to 15 mil within a matter of about 90 days. Well, I don't think we would ever have got that phenomenal growth just by doing things organically. Cricket, on the other hand, we averaged, that number started at about 1 million.
Yep.
And this is a period over that sort of November to February.
But it's a, it's a 6 month,
it's the summer
first season, like fresh, new, a new brand,
effectively,
because you're starting from scratch, starting with a new deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're starting with that million as an audience. Yep.
Traditionally a quieter time of the year, that November through to Feb time, people are going away. It's Christmas. It's a fantastic, in my opinion, it's a fantastic time of year. You've got a few, maybe if you're lucky enough, you've got a few weeks off work. You're always at barbecues. You've got holidays. The cricket's on. If the cricket's not on, there are replays of cricket. So anyway, long story short, over that time, we averaged around 1 million. Fast forward 12 months, we grew 3,000% to 32 million just from that Twitter partnership. Now, sorry, I should say it was not only the Twitter partnership, but we're also creating custom content in that space. As I mentioned, the one-handed catch, along with clipping up, you know, some of the fantastic sixes and fours, which you'd see from the likes of the Big Bash. It was great that we had Virat Kohli and his men in town, which provided for a great conversation on Twitter. And unfortunately, you know, our team didn't play fare as well.
Yes.
But you know, it's a great time of the year, and it's a great space to play, especially when you've got a sport like cricket.
And I think, you know, the takeaway that I took both from what you've said here and, you know, speaking prior to this around Twitter as a platform and a strategy for that platform, I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot to be said of what are your different strategies for each platform,
mm-hmm.
and identifying that the Twitter audience, you know, is engaged. You know, Twitter and live has always been right there
for the last 10
years. They go hand in hand, whether it's live sport, you know, live entertainment, you know, live TV in the case of, you know, Game of Thrones, and the fact that I have to mute things for 8 hours because I don't stop and watch Game of Thrones at 11 o'clock on a Monday when it appears here. You know, but then produce doubling down on that and feeding that, because there's this whole ecosystem of people feeding that, whether it's user-generated content, people having their own commentary, those kind of things. As a publisher or as, you know, as someone that wants to talk about that platform, you've got to treat the platform with a bit of respect and say, this is how we're going to do it. Because if you were just doing the content you're doing on Twitter and then putting it on Facebook and putting the same stuff on Insta, and the becomes a little bit of sameness around all of your platforms.
100%. And look, I'm sure a lot of your audience know is that it's a very unforgiving platform as well. We know that we could not just reclip a talking head in front of a 90-second news package, put it on Facebook or Twitter and just expect the same results.
Yep.
It just doesn't happen. I mean, we produce about 14,000 hours of live sport every year. So this really isn't, I guess, new ground to us. It's just being able to talk with customers in a different way.
So how was the, you know, you've got talented digital producer folk that are driving both the content and then also, you know, driving the social channels. How do you turn the ship a little bit to say, hey guys, well, we have done it this way. Because, you know, there's people saying, oh, we'll just do it like that. There's still a lot of talent in the, whether it's thumbs, because they might not be doing it via a phone, but like tone, you know, how do you get that across? You know, here's the tone, here's the type of content that we're looking for. This, you know, because you're right, it is unforgiving,
mm-hmm.
but it is, you have to keep trying stuff, and you might fail, but every third or fourth one goes off. Because if you just tell someone, I just clip the viral ones, please, right? It's impossible.
True.
But you've got to, like, how do you set that? Oh, here's the path we're going to set. these are the kind of content. How do you, from a, it's almost a staff training or a, it's even a digital team mindset. How do you set that internally?
It's an interesting one, not something I could answer in sort of just a couple of words. And I've seen it evolve, especially over the last 5 years. And I guess it's just getting really, it starts with just being, having all your editorial teams aligned in terms of, you know, what their overall vision is.
Yep.
No doubt from a business perspective, aligning all your KPIs and that sort of thing. But we at Fox, we tend to work very collaboratively, irrespective of the, I guess, the screen size. So you've got your digital journos who are always, you know, focusing more around the breaking news. You've got the social guys complementing a lot of the stuff that they do. And then no doubt you've got your TV producers and your eng camera guys who are out on the road as well. So I guess it's just...
it is a bit of a collaborative effort because you've got to have your, you know, your social guys are closer to it, like they're listening, but more of your journalists are on Twitter. So like it's not, because early on, like the journalists, a lot of the journalists were coming on and using it as a bit of a pulpit, but now now they're getting a bit more embedded. They can see the conversations that are happening. They can see the trends, whether it's, oh, we're going to take that talking point and take it to our talk show, or, oh, this is the content that's resonating with our audience, how can we produce more content like that? And so it just becomes that a bit of a feedback loop between everyone being on a platform like Twitter, but then also feeding it back to you, to the content folk. And then, as with everything at Fox, follow the data. Like, look at what the analytics say, and if you're getting the hits and the views and the traffic, then more of that.
Yeah, you're doing something right. Yeah, I mean, you look at like an NRL example. Typically, as you go into a round, you'll have, you know, no doubt on our broadcast channels, you'll have sort of the, you know, your preview pieces and that sort of thing. You go into your game day, there'll be some kind of key moment in there inside, you know, between those 90 minutes. On most often than not on social, we'll say, we'll send out a breaking news alert of some description that, you know, moment X has happened in this game. Follow it on, you know, 501 or wherever it is. It's our job then, I guess, on digital to clip up some of the best moments in that, provide some analysis in there, and then throw maybe back to our broadcast to say, you know, for a full deep dive, go here.
Yep.
And then maybe to wrap it all up is, or even not so much wrap it up, but continue that conversation all throughout from breaking news moment right through to the end. We've got our social team engaging in, I guess, conversation, but also clipping up those best moments and then supplementing all of the stuff that we're doing on broadcast. So it's, pardon the corporate speak, but it's, I guess, closing the loop essentially on that kind of whole content experience.
So one of the quotes that you did drop at Money in Sport was...
I'm always nervous when you...
No, that's all right. It was about setting up a partnership for success, right? And sort of going back to what your role is, commercial manager digital, but you know, setting up a partnership six irrespective of the check value of the dollars that are there. So you know, there's people who are listening that are, you know, sponsorship execs or digital, trying to work with their sponsorship team to better understand how they can deliver it. So like, what's your approach when talking to a partner and you've got them across the table and yes, they're doing a whole bunch of things and you say like, and trying not to go, oh, there's a real big opportunity there. They've got some money. They're spending money everywhere. We're going to want to find the solution for them. Mm-hmm. What's your first steps into that conversation?
Look, I'd try and take more of a simplistic and holistic view when it comes to these partnerships. And one, don't try and overcomplicate it, essentially. Yep. At the end of the day, there's always a mutual kind of understanding between two parties in terms of what the common goal is.
Yep.
And it's finding out what said goal is. For example, the Twitter partnership was always, for us being Fox Sports, was revenue and audience reach. Okay. For Twitter, it was definitely the revenue component, but also having a leading sports brand in their stable of other publishers as well. So that was kind of the midpoint in terms of where the partnership was spawned out of. And then secondly was coming up with common goals and and shared objectives, I guess. Again, sorry to use corporate jargon there, but it just holds true in terms of if you set the goalposts up early and you're working towards them together and you've both essentially got skin in the game, essentially, yep. That's the way you set up those partnerships for success. The worst thing you want to do is chase – you set up one target, but then you realize halfway through the deal is that your partner's wanting to go the other way. And then when it comes time to review said partnership, well, you're both so misaligned and so unhappy with each other that you don't renew.
Yeah. You're in that terrible, you hear those terrible two words, make goods.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and you know, yeah. And you, and it's because you haven't said, well, this is what you want. And whether it's, you know, reach or audience or acquisition brand, yeah. or you know, all of these things, it's like, well, I know what these products can deliver, and they're aligned. Yeah, if you, because yeah, it is frustrating when you get to that point and then you find out what they actually wanted. Mm-hmm. And that's just as a fault for on both sides. On my sense, you know, because there are definitely some brand partners that don't know what they want and not quite sure, and that's, I guess that's your role of really pushing them to make sure that what they're buying is what they want.
And to that point as well, it's just building that level of trust. A lot of the time, you'll be working on these partnerships for a new client or a new partner, for example, where that inherent trust isn't necessarily there, not by a lack of, you know, something that's malicious, but rather you always go a byproduct of it being in the unknown. So building that trust on both sides, but then also owning your failures as well. I mean, we always try and model ourselves a little bit on that, you know, that startup mentality where you fail, but you fail fast and you learn.
But if you have the trust and you have the conversation there, then if you're changing tack, you can have that conversation. And the same, if a sponsor decides they're going somewhere else, you've got a relationship that you can have that conversation, say, oh, we really like what we're doing here, but we want to move. And it's an open conversation. It's always moving. So I wanted to get to our Sports Geek closing five to wrap this up. I'm with Debs Majumdar from Fox Sports. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I do, actually. And I might show my age here, but I was 8 years old. It was 1992, and it was India's tour of Australia. 5-day test at the SCG. I fell in love with cricket, I guess, there and then. This was kind of the golden age.
So you're there with your dad, or are you just a really independent 8-year-old?
That would be fantastic if it was. Things were a much simpler time in 92. No, I was with my dad and my brother, and it was almost the golden age of cricket. I remember Booney hit 129 not out. I mean, Booney was just awesome. You know, you had the likes of Shane Warne and Kapil Dev, Sachin Tendulkar, and they were all here. I think it was even called, it might have been the Benson and Hedges tour. So
back when cigarette packets were sponsoring
exactly,
and you know, sponsoring cricketers.
The vibe, the atmosphere of the SCG in the 90s, and cricket for what it was back then was just amazing. So that always
that would have been also back when SCG had the hill.
That's true. It did too.
Yeah, it had the grass hill, and
I'm sure you could still buy beer in glass
in tins, probably, right. Most likely. Being in sport in multiple roles over the journey, do you have a favorite food memory at a sports event, or do you have a go to food when you're at a sports event?
Don't have a go-to food. I'm always a sucker for some hot chips, irrespective of the price. I remember, this isn't my answer, but I remember spending $9 on some hot chips at the Sydney Olympics.
Yeah,
many years ago.
It is a little bit like where's the report on the price of hot chips around the world? Like that's how we can start to we can start sort of rating different events. But do you have a favorite food memory?
Favorite food memory. Now this is a great one. I'm hoping this can go down in one of your all time favorites, Sean. The LA Dodgers at the SCG 2014.
Okay, yes, I was there.
There was obviously a very heavy American influence. It was thick cut bacon on a stick.
Okay. I think I remember that.
Traditionally pretty thin, right? But imagine bacon, but cut to the size of probably a slice of bread.
Yep.
On a paddle pop stick almost. And it was oily, it was shiny, it was just fantastic. And I just remember eating it, being so thirsty, but also so happy at the same time.
Oh, well, it qualifies to, because it's bacon, right? Oh, it's automatically in the Hall of Fame for mine. I'm Homer Simpson in real life, really. Yeah, right. what's the first app you open in the morning?
I'm going to contradict what I just said about loving bacon, but Instagram, because I'm a bit of a fitness fanatic, and I always find a bit of morning fitspo before I try and go hit the gym in the morning.
Okay, it's part of your morning routine to get a bit of inspo, and then you hit the gym.
A quick shot of pre workout and a bit of a scroll, seeing what all of the much fitter people around the world are doing. Yeah, and then
hopefully get the workout in and work on your own filter.
Exactly.
Is there someone that you follow or read that you suggest the podcast listeners should follow, and why?
Interesting one. Yes, the Tim Ferriss Show is one I listen to a lot. I've been a big fan of his ever since, his book, The 4-Hour Workweek. And I always think there's merit in learning something outside of your kind of sphere of expertise. For example, there's always a lot of life lessons, resilience, and that sort of things, which he talks about, and I think that's just so important in terms of.
And he is a terrific interviewer. I mean, if someone says, "Hey, I want to start listening to podcasts," I always send them to his interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yep,
like that too. It's almost a 2-hour podcast interview, but he dives in on. And it's pretty much been the basis of his his Tribe of Mentors book, mm-hmm. which is all those interviews.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's really good that you can dive in on people you know. You're like, I want to hear him talk to Tony Robbins or, the big names. Sure. But then the names you don't know, and that's sort of part of the power of podcasts. It's like you get drawn in by the big guests, mm-hmm. and then you're like, oh, there's other interesting stories in between those tentpole guests, I guess.
Oh, definitely. And, there are always little nuggets that just stay with you all the time, right?
And just the way that he – I guess breaks down what people's days are, their motivations, is truly fascinating. Lastly, and you might have spoiled a little bit, but what social media platform is your MVP? What's your go-to social media platform?
Go-to. I'm gonna sit on the fence and give you.
No, there's two. There's no sitting on the fence. This is an MVP. It's not a co-MVP. This is where it makes it tough. We do the tough decisions here.
We do. All right. I've already given Twitter a plug, so I was going to say Twitter.
Yep.
Twitter's still great. I'm going to go with YouTube.
Okay.
I feel it's – for me, it's had a bit more of a resurgence for me personally, especially having two young kids.
Yep.
In terms of just – it's awesome.
For the people who have young kids, just for you, Baby Shark. There you go. It's stuck in your head for the rest of the day.
I highly recommend you don't try not to get stuck
but
on
yeah,
that.
But yeah, and so is it content for you? Like I'm the same. Like I've no YouTube's there, and since my latest TV buy, and I've got YouTube integrated into the TV, mm-hmm. I'm watching more of it because I can go click click and I'm there. Mm-hmm. Is that how you're?
Yes, 100%. But it's also seeing my 4-year-old use the YouTube UI and
yep.
just rolling from one video to another. The stuff that she starts to engage with and watch. The other day, we're always kind of supervising our kids when they're on YouTube because there are some questionable things on there, especially for kids. But it's more around my 6-year-old came up to me the other day and went, "Oh, Daddy, can we go and watch Mr. Bean?" And I was like, "How did you know about Mr. Bean? He was around in like 1992. And she goes, "Oh, I watched some episodes on YouTube." And it was just awesome that she's now engaging with such an awesome show. That was Mr. Bean. I showed a picture of Rowan Atkinson today and she just couldn't get over how it aged. But for me as well, it's just in engaging in so a variety of different content, but so frictionlessly, if that's a word.
No, it is, and it also, I guess, it gives you some insight into your role in this is how content is being consumed, this is the different type of content, but then also how the recommendation engine is working to serve up the content. So it sort of helps you on both fronts.
It does. And on the commercial side as well, they've been doing it for many years in terms of just offering brands different commercial entitlements, in and around. They've got things like obviously 6-second pre-rolls, mid-rolls, the longer second. I think I've even seen a 5-minute pre-roll from Ty Lopez, which was an interesting one where I actually sat and watched through the entire thing.
Yep.
Changing up the ad frequency and that sort of thing. I just find that sort of thing quite fascinating as well.
Well, terrific. We have to wrap things up because I think we're going to get kicked out of the studio in a moment.
Don't they know who you are?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. What are the best platforms for people to connect with you?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn? I'm on that quite straight after Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn just to see.
So, slid into and you're Debs M on a lot of platforms?
I try and keep it consistent, yes.
Okay, well, we'll put all the links for that in the show notes. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following Sports Geek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Debs Majumdar. Please send him a tweet, Debs M on Twitter, and exactly the same on LinkedIn with his vanity URL. But you can always get the links in the show notes to connect with guests. In this case, it's episode 237. So sportsgeekhq.com/237. If you go there, you can also go to the links to the guest profiles. And there is LinkedIn access to all of my over 200 and something, something. I think we're getting close to 250 guests on the podcast, and very thankful for them taking the time to chat and share some of their insights for you, the podcast audience. Before I wrap up, just one last thing. I'd love to work with you. I'd love to help you achieve outcomes, and whatever those outcomes might be, they might be trying to tackle a new platform, trying to align a strategy around a platform like Twitter, how you could use it, or helping your content team get some inspiration from what teams and leagues are doing from around the world, a little bit of steel with pride. How can you adapt some of the best practice from around the world and adapt it to what you can do from a resourcing, but also what you can do from an audience point of view? What does your audience want to look at? Or you just might want to look at how can we better deliver from a digital point of view with one of our partners, and sort of tap on me from an ideas and ideation point of view to come up with some cool campaign activations and content ideas. Pretty much in the Pick My Brain session, you get to decide. You can come with the problem, you can come with the brief, you can come with the need and the questions. It's been used in a variety of different ways. Some of them are pretty much free form, ask me anything on any particular topic around digital and marketing and platforms, and others have come in laser focused with a specific problem or a specific campaign in mind. I bring along a lot of value in those conversations. So it's a 2-hour consulting session via GoToMeeting. Happy to meet in your time zone, whether it means an early morning for me or a late night for me, depending on where you are in the world. But that's pretty much what the Pick My Brain session is for. I'm really enjoying the sessions I've been doing, and I'd love to do one with yourself as a listener and help you achieve the goals that you want. So if you want to book one of those Pick My Brain sessions, you can either email me, Sean@SportsGeekHQ, or you can simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/pickmybrain, and it will take you straight to a link. You can book it in, you can pay for it, you can have it all locked in, and we can start helping you achieve those goals. That's it for this week. If you've got any other questions, please feel free to email me or send me a tweet or send me a message on LinkedIn. Until the next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Follow our League of Legends esports team at gravitas.gg. For more resources, go to sportsgeekhq.com. Looking for new campaign ideas to drive new and fresh data and leads? Contact Sean to find out how SportsGeek can help you drive fans into your stadium. It's all about the cheeks in the seats.